Welcome one and all once again to the Amazing Spider-Cast for the Amazing Spider-Man 2, the last part of our series. Joining me this week, we have Justin. And we have Chris.
Yo.
James is in limbo right now. I really don't know if he's hiding from us because he doesn't want to talk about this movie. But if he shows up, we'll add him to the call. With that said, just start as we always do by running out of the cast. Returning from The Amazing Spider-Man, we have Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, Sally Field as Aunt May, who gets a lot more to work with in this film. New to this sequel, we have Jamie Foxx as Electro. We have Dane DeHaan as Green Goblin. Oh, Harry Osborn. Whatever. We have Paul Giamatti as... I'm not even going to say Rhino because that doesn't count.
Someone who thinks that he's Russian but probably isn't.
We have, because they're so very important to this, we have Campbell Scott as Richard Parker and Emmett Davids as Mary Parker, because for some reason they decided to dedicate half of this movie to the Parker family. So, yeah, I guess we'll start there, because I said this was the first movie that I wasn't too enthralled by the saga of the adult Parkers, and this movie seems to double down on that. So if you aren't invested into that subplot, which from what I understand from the original film, a lot of people weren't, it's going to be a long ride for you here.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I wouldn't have minded it if they didn't have that plane crash be the start of the film. If they had put that in, like, as a flashback while he's, like, in the subway looking through their research, that would have been totally fine.
Or if maybe it didn't start off exactly as, you know, the original one starts off.
Well, I mean, yeah,
just
that
from,
too.
Like, the slightly different perspective, it's like, we've already seen this. Like, was this cut from the original film? Like,
I think that's a way out of that. Yeah, I think that's a lot of this is, like, stuff that was probably cut from the original. And it's like, crap, we have to tell this story because the audience won't know about it later on when he makes that discovery, which, yeah, we'll get to that in a bit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we start off with a James Bond-esque sequence with Richard and May Parker on a plane. And they're playing with very fancy Wi-Fi, apparently.
Right. Is this, like, what, the 1990s, at least?
I would say...
Early 2000s?
I would say probably... I would say about 2000. Because Peter's 18 in here, and they asked him when he's about...
That's what he looks like. And for some reason, they didn't think to upload Roosevelt, like, before...
That confused the hell out of me.
Well, yeah, it's like, I don't know why they just didn't do that before they got on the plane. They probably could have even done it, like, while they were driving him to Ben's.
They could have done it before, like, the person broke in and obviously didn't find anything. Do it then.
Hey, Ben, do you have some internet that I could use?
I have to do something. It would have been so easy, and then it could have, like, saved him from his wife getting shot. I mean, they both would have died, but it would have been less of a struggle.
Yeah, and again, fancy internet, as it keeps, it continues their progress even when everything gets disconnected.
Right, like, even when he closes it and then, like, reopens it in the middle of a plane crash, it still manages to upload successfully.
Well, let's go back to that point, too, because, like, the whole, like, we're going to get on a private charter plane with people we don't know. And we're being hunted. Why wouldn't you take, like, a commercial liner?
Yeah.
Maybe a car.
Yeah.
Where were they going?
I think they were going to some remote island or something, they said.
I mean, they should have done they should have, like, gone on commercial, like Chris said. So, I've never been on a plane or on a flight. Is it that easy to just, like, get on a plane at last minute? And get tickets, even if it's a private...
Depending on when this is set, it'd probably be easier, because that would have been probably pre-9/11.
Yeah.
So it might have been easier. I don't know how you charter a plane. If you're hiding from somebody, it's probably not the best idea to charter a plane, because you have to use your real name and your ID.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's like, there's the Parkers. They're on this plane by themselves. I wonder if we can get somebody on board.
Well, didn't they even... mention, like, they were going to change their identities while they were on the flight?
again, something they should have done beforehand.
Yeah, so the Parker's not so smart. That extends to their kid, too, apparently.
Okay, and as an aside, and maybe I am... What were they running from?
They were running from Oscorp.
Yes, I got that, but what? Because they're upholding a foul, but I thought Oscorp was looking for them to because they stole research. Why would they kill them?
I think because they were going to plan to, like, release that information publicly and show, like, Oscorp's doing these dealings with, like, terrorists and all that jazz.
Okay.
I think. I could be totally off base with that.
I thought it was that... You know, I don't even know at this point. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, like, it could have been captivating. Like, it could have been, like, an interesting...
Yes.
Story piece, but instead it's just kind of there so that, you know, Peter can learn about his past.
The only thing about it that was interesting is the stuff with the spiders, which we will get to later. That's really the only part about it that I found, like, even remotely interesting.
Okay. I actually want to jump ahead to that point, because I was trying to understand why I'm watching this movie, and I sat on this for about 2 weeks. Who did they expect to figure out their puzzle?
Oh, well, like, we're sending it to Roosevelt, like...
I've been expecting...
I don't understand why they were sending it to their bunker in the...
They could have easily sent it with Peter and Ben, be like, here, like, wear this on your neck and just, like, keep it safe for the rest of your life.
It happens to the train station that he used to take that was decommissioned during some time, and then he had a bunch of tokens hidden in his calculator. Like, who was going to figure that out?
This seems like really needlessly complicated. The Parkers, the Parkers must have been like fun to play charades with.
Well, I mean, I don't remember if I brought this up in the first movie, but it was the same criticism I had with them and the formula in the first movie, where he had it hidden in a secret compartment of his bag. And it's like, I get that you're being protective, but at what point did you assume that somebody was going to have the time to figure this out?
Maybe that was his plan. Maybe he was, like, planning to, like, fake his death for a while. That way, it would take them, like, 15 years to figure out. Then he would figure it out for them and expose it to Oscorp.
I feel like they needed exposition, and they couldn't retcon the original movie, so they came up with this super complicated puzzle.
Well, that's too bad, because I'm pretty sure, depending on your perspective, they retcon about, like, 50 different things in this.
Yes. I guess to kind of move aside from that, even though the movie doesn't, we should actually talk about our hero.
Yes.
Spider-Man entered this movie, and actually grand fashion. I mentioned this with the first one. I worry about what they do with the web swinging. And
this is really good.
Yeah.
Especially, like, that opening, like, montage where he's swinging through the scene and, like, shifts perspective to, like, first person, then third person, then, like, over the shoulder.
Yeah, and it's very nifty. Granted, I don't think it had anything to do with anything in this movie, but it was really cool to see.
I know. It was totally, like, probably mostly for 3D, but they figured, like, it was so cool that they could leave it in for the 2D people.
What's crazy about it is it probably cost them tens of millions of dollars to just do that one sequence.
Mm-hmm. Like, probably cost them out the ass.
Right. I mean, it's a cool-looking sequence, but it's, like, 2-3 minutes of film.
Right.
Yeah, and let's be honest, this film doesn't need failure. It could trim it out.
It's long.
And I think
I like it, but this movie is, like, ungodly long for how much, like, stuff kind of does not happen.
Yeah. And I was going to say the other thing that I find a bit redundant is that they do it again right after, and that's actually an action sequence. So I didn't
the containment or the plutonium or whatever it was.
Yeah. Like, I didn't get the point of having those scenes back to back.
There's something about that, like, whole 5-6 minute action sequence that bothered me, and it's kind of something that we mentioned in when we talked about Spider-Man 2, where, like, Willem Dafoe just, like, showed up and no one, like, asked him to leave. It's Dennis Leary.
Oh, the ghost.
It just
Ghost Leary.
There's something about, like, his face. Like, it would have been better if he talked, because otherwise he just looks, like, really creepy.
Well, I mean, that's the point. He's supposed to be a figment of Peter's imagination. His guilt manifests in itself.
Well, yeah, but it's, like, really creepy to have just, like, some 50-year-old dude just, like, staring at you every time you turn your head.
Well, it makes sense. I think I would have hated the movie more if they had him speak, because you don't need to explain why Peter's seeing him. Even though they do it a couple of times.
Which right.
It's been Peter's Obi-Wan.
Right. Use the Force.
Get away from my daughter, Peter.
Do not fail my daughter.
I made you promise, although you didn't actually promise.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gwen Stacy, was that the most foreshadowing speech ever
Oh my God. You might as well have just like a giant neon clock that was just like counting down.
I think, what type of Victorian speech is this?
It's just like, live every moment to your fullest, and we're not invincible, so we should use this time to appreciate the life we have. It's just like, Jesus Christ, Gwen.
Well, I mean, it's
poignant,
and
it's also,
it makes
like,
sense
really
considering what has happened to her dad. Like, she, out of all people, kind of understands.
Yeah, I guess
right.
I just...
But
I
it's
just
also
know.
Super heavy-handed.
Oh, yeah. It's like, well, the whole movie's heavy-handed. It's like, we're just going to drop everything here on you.
But I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I already know her face. Everybody who reads comic knows her face. And let's be honest, the commercials were not hiding it at all.
Oh my God, dude, they were so spoiled. I was halfway expecting the film to do, like, in medias res, where just, like, it starts with that, like, that shot of her falling in slow motion, and then it just, like, yeah, so this is what happened.
Yeah.
I halfway expected that.
Okay. We're going to get to this later as well, but I wanted to jump to the very end while speaking of the trailer. They have the entire final segment of this movie, the fight with Rhino, in the trailers.
I don't get why that was such a big, huge marketing push when he's, like, barely in the film at all.
I don't, like, it feels like they wanted to end the movie on a good note.
Right.
So they put what should have been the start of the next movie at the end of this movie.
Right. Or it's like, I mean, don't get me
right,
wrong, that's a cool visual to end on, like that slow motion shot, even though it's ridiculous realistically, like the way that he uses a sewer a manhole cover to like smack down missiles, which I'm pretty sure isn't even possible, but it also feels like a Lord of the Rings thing, where it's like, it's ending just as it's about to start.
I don't know if ending the movie on a, like, the downer, though, of Gwen Stacy, being dropped and Peter kind of just, like, being rather mopey. I don't know if it would have made the film any better, like...
I mean, honestly speaking, I think they should have ended it at the grave.
After they beat Electro.
Well, no,
that's where he should have ended it.
Well, so when he's at the grave, I think they should have ended it there, and then you could start, like, honestly speaking, thematically, you could have just started the next movie right there and kind of explain, like, maybe it's been a couple of months and Peter's been here every day. Because they do kind of get that in there again with the
Yeah, they go through the seasons, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's something else about that scene that kind of bothered me, and it's the kid. Like, I get why he's there, but I also wish it was a different kid. do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it the kid from the beginning?
Well, it's the kid that was getting bullied.
Well, yeah, but like, I wish that it was the new Spider-Man, because like Andrew Garfield straight up said, like, after the third one, I'm out. So this would have been like a good time to introduce that kid, and it would have like made more sense thematically.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
he's only signed for one more film.
Yeah,
that's what he says. Yeah.
That's what he says. I mean, they already planned like 3 and 4, so who knows how they're going to handle that after 3.
Money talks, as they say. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's a cool visual, it's a neat idea. It shouldn't have been at the end of this film. But I guess going back to the beginning, continuing from we should have started. At the end of the last movie, Gwen and Peter are on the rocks, which I really thought they should have kept from the first movie and then made that a plot point here.
Right. Instead of apparently, this is like the third or fourth time that it's happened in the entire year.
Yeah, and it's like, Yeah, we didn't get to see
Unfortunately,
that.
Like, we don't get any of that. Yeah, that's kind of the problem with it is we get that we get the implication when Gwen breaks up with him, but there's no basis for it because
they ended on kind of like a relatively good note at the end.
Right.
Like if the film had like cut out that part at the school at the end about keeping promises and just went straight to credits, that would have been fine. It would have left you wondering, but here it's just like you kissed her once, so we know that you two are still on relatively good terms.
Right.
And dating.
Yeah, it made their entire self-shot just for you feel forced. And it actually, and I guess this goes with that, it just kind of gets pushed to the side for the middle portion of this movie until it becomes relevant. Like, I mean, Emma, like, she has the self-shot with her going to Oxford and stuff, but that's such a minor part of it. And as we'll get to with the climax, they really do have to force it into a lot of scenes for it to even work.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I like the two leads together, but I also feel like they didn't have a lot to work with this time, and it felt like things were cut down.
I think especially with them, because, if we had started the movie with them on the rocks instead of them dating and then breaking up at the start of the movie, if they had stayed broken up throughout the first half of the movie and then them getting back together at the end would have made it more impactful than them being together and then him breaking up in the most awkward way. Like, he decides to go to dinner with her parents anyhow, and then he's like, oh, no, I'm going to break up with you outside. Yeah.
Right.
And kind of building off of that point, I think that the problem with, you know, Gwen and Peter is just that this movie tries to cram too much plot into what they're doing with it. Like, so you have the Gwen and Peter stuff, then you have the Electra stuff, then you have the Harry Osborn stuff. And none of it ties up, and it's all really rushed because they don't really know where they're going with any of it.
Right.
Well, I feel it's kind of the opposite. I feel like they know where they're going, and that's why this movie feels so rushed.
They knew where they wanted to get to.
They didn't know how to get there.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, we need to get to Gwen dying. That's the end point here.
Okay, and I know we're jumping around. We haven't even talked about the film, but I do want to touch on that as well. And I guess we'll tie that in with the villain, because I don't even want to say villain. I actually like what they did and didn't do at the same time. The villain in here is Max Dillon Electro. I kind of like that they made him that kind of socially awkward.
I like the. What Jamie Foxx did with the character. I like Electro as a villain. He does go from kind of being a dynamic character
to
as
one
Max
note.
To just being like, yeah, yeah. like, yeah. And it happens instantly. Like,
right.
It's that scene in Times Square where, you know, they're talking and he still kind of has that, he's still Max. Like,
right.
He's Electro, but he's still Max at that point. And then, once that shot comes from the sniper rifle, everything changes and he goes to very much one note.
Also, on that note, the cops in New York are some of the freaking worst. Because in the first one, Stacy tells a cop before Peter goes to Oscorp, like, do not shoot Spider-Man. And the first thing that he does is shoot Spider-Man in the leg. And then the same thing happens here where he tells him, like, if he makes... Like, don't shoot yet. Right. Spider-Man is straight up just like, not shoot him.
They have the twitchiest trigger fingers. Like.
Right.
Like, well, if you've ever been to New York, you'd understand why. I mean, shoot first, ask questions, say that.
Another thing that I liked him, like, in his apartment, that birthday scene, but it got really creepy and sad, like, really fast.
Like, and I think that's why it worked.
It kind of killed, like, I think the voice kind of killed it for me and the birthday card.
Nah, I thought that was cool. I will say this much, and this kind of goes back to your point about Rhino. I feel like the villains of this movie were in a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are playing it as big and over the top as comic book villains, where everybody else is trying to be really grounded and somber, especially Paul Giamatti and his Let's go with accent to be nice.
Dude, that I'm pretty sure that accent is offensive to some Russians.
I'm pretty sure that accent is offensive to anybody with two sets of ears.
It's like, why couldn't they just hire an actual Russian?
I honestly don't even get why they need to point Giamatti to be Rhino.
Or not even that. Just, like, don't have him in the film.
Again, if they wanted to set up the next one, and they do it in the most ham-fisted way with him.
Yeah.
Actually, the whole thing is ham-fisted. But, yeah, I like what they did with Electro. I like his origin. I feel like because in the comic books, then, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some defender. He's kind of a lame character.
No, he's totally lame. Like, everything about him is pretty lame in the comics. One of the reviews I read said that he was upset because of Electro's design in this, because in the original, he's, like, one of the coolest-looking characters. That's a friggin' lie.
Oh, I actually looked at this. I googled Electro's costume, both his new one and his ultimate one. This is close to their ultimate one. Mm-hmm. There are certain comic code characters, as much as I like, should never be on, mm-hmm. should never be adapted as is.
You could not translate the original Electro costume to film properly.
Without people laughing.
Well, yeah, I mean, the closest one is probably Spectacular Spider-Man, which isn't even, like, a callback. It's just more, like, in between Ultimate and the regular.
Yeah, just as an aside, I was watching an episode of the Flash TV show today, mm-hmm. and they had the Trickster on it, and they translated his costume. That costume looks gaudy and awful as hell when an actual person wears it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, it looks gaudy and awful as hell when it's worn in the comic books, but it's even worse when it's trying to be. So yeah, I'm happy they didn't go with that. And I saw this on your Twitter earlier. People also complaining about the fact that they made him a black guy.
Me? Well, my problem isn't that he made a black guy. It's just that they made him the only black guy in New York, and it's just really weird.
Well, as a New Yorker, I know there's only one black guy in New York. I'm the only one I ever see. But
weird.
Yeah, it's a weird city, I know.
Yeah.
We have systems, like, there's only a token within, like, a 3-mile radius. So we just call each other ahead of time and say we're going to be in an area. So
like, what happens if, like, there's miscommunication, you're both in the same place? Does, like, one of you explode, or, like, do they just, like, kidnap you and kill you, or?
I can't tell you this.
Okay. Another issue that I had with Electro, this is less of Jamie Foxx and just more of the writing, is that he had some of the worst lines, and I can think of three of them in particular. The worst one is, not the worst one, but, like, third worst is when they're in Times Square, it's just like, today's my birthday, guess I better blow out my candles.
it's kind of fitting for the goofiness that they were going with those villains, though, like.
It's really bad. The other one is when they're in, was it Ravencroft? And he's talking to the doctor with, like, the most unconvincing accent ever. And he's just talking, and, like, he literally names himself Electro. And he's, like, doing his whole little speech about, like, everyone's going to be in the dark and know what it's going to be like without Spider-Man. That was so dumb. And then there was another one when he's, like, projecting his face on this window. He's just like, come to me and that's a lie. It's when he goes, let's go catch a spider.
Like I said, I think the fans of this movie thought they were in a different movie than the one that we got. They both do seem to be playing it up a lot more, which works, but it's a really odd contrast to... And I guess, to be fair, Spider-Man does it as well. He is very jokey and, you know, but it's the scenes when they're not in costumes that's really grounded and somber, and it's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird tonal shift often.
Right.
And then let's go with Green Goblin, because that's the name they give him.
Do they give him that name in the credits?
Oh, I don't even remember.
I'm gonna look this up.
Okay, first off, and this is just a minor pet peeve, I know, probably not even anything. Why did he transform into that after taking Spider Venom?
Because the Venom was tuned into Parker blood only.
Oh, no, I didn't get why grew teeth and his hair got all.
I guess the disease within him, the disease that Norman gave him, like when he was born, I guess like the Venom like sped up the process and accelerated it.
That reminds me.
I guess. I'm assuming.
His whole arc, his dad dies, Norman Osborn dies.
Yeah, it's really weird. I think this is the first and, like, maybe the only universe, like, across all Spider-Man forms of media where Peter does not meet Norman Osborn.
Well, I'm sure he knows
Norman does. Well, I mean, like, they physically meet, and Norman does not become the Green Goblin.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm going to put die in quotes. Like, for some, like, his head, I believe, is still in ice somewhere.
Is it?
So, that's what I saw with one of the Easter eggs or something.
I don't remember that.
But, yeah, his whole self-doubt is his dad dies. His dad looks to be, like, in his 50s or 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad tells him he has the same disease that he has.
Yeah, that's the worst time to tell him.
I've given you this genetic disease. Also, I'm going to die now.
Yeah, so it's like, I feel like you should have told your kid that, like when you sent him off to England, be like, hey, you should, like, go to England and, like, find a cure for my shit.
Well, I was actually going to say, because, like, Harry finds out and that becomes his sole mission, like, I need this cure now. When it's like he has at least another 30, 40 years to figure it out.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's also, like, at least in his 20s. Well, no one in their 20s, like, wants to die.
Everything about Harry Osborn in this film seems super rushed, like, that the Harry Peter relationship is super rushed, and then Harry goes from zero to crazy in, like, three scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I was just confused.
Yeah. I like the performances more than I like the writing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with the first one as well. Like, the actors they get are great. The writing needs a lot to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note,
I feel like this is something that they should have, like, addressed. This is something that they could have addressed in a sequel, or if, like, the film should have been, like, either about, like, Electro, like, becoming a villain, or it should have been, like, Harry, like, tracking down Spider-Man.
Yes, again, if they had a plan for these films and not trying to condense everything into one.
Right.
It's similar to the problem I have with Spider-Man 3, but opposite. With Spider-Man 3, we kind of had, like, okay, we have to do Harry's plot. So we get rid of him, we do Sandman, we get rid of him, bring back Harry, we get rid of him, we'll do Sandman and Venom. And this one, it's like, we'll do Electro, we'll do nothing in the middle of the movie, okay, we'll do Electro, and we gotta bring in Green Goblin. Why? Mm-hmm. Because we have to kill Gwen.
Yeah, because he has to be in this if we're doing Gwen Stacy.
I was probably, how old is Harry in this movie?
I think he's like at least 19
age.
Isn't he like 19 or 20?
Yeah, I felt like he was older than Peter in this film. Like, I swore they mentioned he was 20 something when he took over, but Peter's just like 18 because he's just graduating high school.
Right.
So, yeah, they're, I don't know.
I don't think they're that older than each other.
Well, I guess the reason I found it weird is because they seem to be best friends, and granted,
right,
it's probably...
But where does the foundation for that come from outside of, oh...
Hey, remember that thing that you did?
My friend, when I was seven years ago, my friend disappeared. I see him on TV because his dad died. So I'm just going to stop by his palatial mansion in the middle of the city.
Right.
And they're going to let me in because they're going to know who the fuck I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be able to see this guy who's having a meeting with his executive committee. And then it's just like, all of a sudden they're pals again. Like,
mm-hmm. It's like, they should have, like, it'd be great if they, like, mentioned him at some point in the first film. Or it'd be like, I haven't really had friends since, you know, Harry left or something. But no, he just, like, completely, like, blitzes in out of nowhere and just rolls up in his freaking Rolls Royce.
Yeah, and that'll be true when most of the first film takes place in Oscorp. He could have, my friend's dad owns this place or something.
Right,
right.
It's so, right. It's so weird. You think it'd be like, hey, when he's checking in the first movie, like, he steals that kid's idea. It could have been like, I'm Peter Parker. I'm a friend of Mr. Osborn's son.
Yeah, something like that. But again, I feel like they didn't know what they have with their first film, and once it kind of became a success, they decided we're just going to tie everything together very, very loosely. Anything, a name drop, they mentioned, like, maybe Peter and Harry had a picture together in his room or something, anything to, you know, like, they used to be best friends.
If it was something.
It's like the whole thing with Harry is just, like, really, really kind of forced.
Yeah, speak.
because you go from that one scene where, you know, Harry and Peter meet back up, then they go from the next scene is, you know, we're walking on the beach or whatever together, and then the next scene is, Peter, you need to get me Spider-Man. I know that you know who he is.
Yeah.
And then it's like, now I'm crazy.
Spider-Man can do anything a spider can, even self-heal. It's just like, what?
Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, I guess kind of going back to the Troia talk from before. Is it me, or was that scene that they kept on playing up in the Troia?
It's not there. It's which, not there which, at all. The one where like, which, what, like Peter Parker's being like why yeah, I would Oscorp be tracking Peter Parker? It's not in the film at all. It's
right.
Not there.
Well, it's weird how much this film like has been spoiled and how much has also been not spoiled.
Yeah, hold on. Before we, I think James is joining us now. Or not. Okay. But yeah, I kept on waiting for that scene to happen. I'm like,
right.
Because this was in every Troy they showed.
And it's just like, isn't that, it's like Oscorp's been putting you on surveillance. Isn't that the question of the day?
Yeah.
I was expecting that. It's like, for some reason, the whole time I thought that's going to be like Norman and Harry were going to like kidnap Spider-Man or like at least these experiments to go after him. It's just like, no, dude, my dad's dead. So and I need help.
Yeah, I guess they kind of explained this. I was going to say, like, why doesn't Peter give him his blood?
All right, I guess now we know why.
Because, I mean, I think he could have, you know, like, they could have, I'm sure they would have tested it or whatever. It's not like they were just going to give him a blood injection.
Right, but I mean, at the same time, I think, I can't even explain it. I got nothing.
Oh, speaking of Harry, my favorite scene with Harry, and I went with a friend and I was trying, Harry meets Gwen in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
yes. Well, I mean, I assume that he like went through the personnel files of everybody, or maybe like he. No, I guess Peter didn't say Gwen's name. Well, I mean, he could. They could have mentioned it off screen. Be like, hey, I was dating this girl named Gwen. But well, no, because they were at the beach and he. Well, yeah, he did mention her once. Like, oh, yeah. So you must be Gwen.
Is that not creepy?
It's yeah, pretty creepy.
Hey, that's my feelings about the movie.
Often, like, it was kind of creepy, but also kind of not. Just felt like he was trying to, it felt like he was trying to hit on her, but also, like, try to establish a rapport with her as a friend.
Yeah. I mean, it feels forced in the sense that, oh, we need these two to interact before the climax. We can't do it natively, so
right.
We'll have a bump into him in the elevator.
So,
during.
So about that scene in the office, was that Felicia Hardy, or was that just some chick named Felicia?
I thought it was Felicia Hardy, but.
Okay. I mean, because that's okay. I mean, she's so hot, but I'm just like, who is this girl?
Oh no! Because Harry's like introduce yourself. She's like Felicia, and I'm just waiting for him to go Felicia. What?
Yeah. And he's just like, this girl's in charge of all of you now because she's my assistant. It's just like, wow, you're gonna sleep with her then, aren't you?
I'm waiting for him to say, oh, Miss Hardy, come to my office or something. And she never. I mean, it's a comedy movie, and she doesn't have a ass name in the credits.
All right. According to Wikipedia, that is indeed Felicia Hardy.
I assume it's supposed to be, but she's never named that in the film.
Right.
Yeah, she's just named Felicia, and it's just like an Easter egg for
I guess. And then for some reason, she decides that this kid who she has never met before can like know about his dad's secret projects.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the other office subplot would be the. Yeah, you mentioned the secret projects, but also them framing Harry and, I guess, trying to cover up Gwen finding out this stuff.
So they were like, framing Harry and covering all it up to make sure that no one knew that Oscorp was, like, quote-unquote, behind Electro. Like, because the stocks had already plummeted after Norman died, right?
I think they wanted to get rid of
They wanted to get rid of Harry in general.
Okay.
And they covered up Electro part of it because of that, but part of it because they wanted to pin it on Harry for knowing this and then covering it up himself.
I mean, to be fair, he didn't really know much. They probably could have just told him, be like, keep it quiet.
But that was, I mean, the point was to get him out, and this kind of saves face because it's like, oh, look, Harry comes and he creates this, and we got rid of him as soon as we found out.
Yeah, when we locked him up in our crazy prison.
Yeah, which they apparently owned somehow. Yes.
Why not? Oscorp owns everything in this city.
Right, I'm pretty sure Oscorp owns, like, the entire... Oscorp might actually own the entire city.
I mean, they supply power to the city.
Right, via hydroelectricity, which apparently, like, is so important that they can't even credit the guy who actually, like, worked on the design for some reason.
Which, I mean, I could kind of... But it's so weird that, like, even he didn't get up. Like, he's still kind of... It looks like he's still maintenance for them in that department, even though...
Right. It's weird. Do you think they would have promoted him? Or maybe, like, maybe he just, like, make a fuss about it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And,
no.
I mean, that was a random Easter egg. Well, I guess not Easter egg, but they had...
With Alistair Smythe?
Yeah.
See, when they announced that, I thought that they were going to do, like, a Spider Slayer thing, and that's how they would try to, like, get Spider-Man's blood. But no, he's just in there as, like, some dude, and then he's never to be seen again.
Yeah.
I did like that scene where, like, Max sort of, like, imagines what he would do to Smythe, like, after he's like, oh, yeah, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I did like that scene.
Yeah. And I will just say, I feel like, I know that this podcast is a bit disjointed, but I pretty much how this movie shot progresses.
Yeah, basically. So now, let's talk more about Electro.
I was going to actually talk more about the Parkers, because we kind of revisit that in the middle, as we find out why Aunt May never wants to talk about them, is one, she wants Peter to be her son.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I love that scene, by the way.
And two, it's because after the disappearance and, I guess, death of Richard and Mary, some people from Oscorp came to them and kind of suggested that they stole money and they were trying to hide when they got killed.
All right. Well, was it that they stole money or that they stole, like, information?
Either they were selling secrets, something. They basically came down to them doing it for the money.
Yeah.
She's been trying to show Peter from that. Because she gets really upset at his wall web.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, this is when Peter solves the world's greatest Rubik's Cube.
Mm-hmm.
And he figures out that his dad had a secret base under a deficient train station that somehow is only activated through old tokens.
Right.
Again,
which must have been a nightmare for the architect.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how you built that thing in secret.
Right.
But, whatever.
Well, I don't know, like, how they didn't, like, reopen it or something and figure that out.
Well, we do have, I mean, I will say we do have train stations in the city that no longer are in use. And I know one was post-converted into a museum and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. But yeah, that happens, and it's probably not to do anything with them, or it's not practical. Because, you know, these are very expensive projects. So they probably mothball it until whenever, but that makes sense.
Well, where did Richard Parker get the money to
design
an undergrunter lab in it?
Like, even if he got, like, how does nobody else know that happened?
Right.
Oh yeah, that reminds me. Richard asked me to build this underground thing for him the other week. You probably want to look into that if you're looking for any of his secrets.
Maybe he got a contractor.
Like, why didn't Dr. Connors know about this?
Maybe he got, like, a contractor, like a secret contractor.
What type of money do you think they made?
Well, apparently, well, I mean, I don't know, dude, it's Oscorp, so they probably, like, made a lot.
I don't know, because they have Peter with nothing.
Well, I mean, you know, you got priorities.
We're going to run away and leave us with no money.
We need to take all of our money and go on a private jet, which will probably get us
killed. Fuck our son.
Yeah, because that's a very minor subplot in this film. I guess I kind of enjoy that they don't care too much that the Parkers are broke. But a part of the subplot is that Aunt May's taking on a second job.
Mm-hmm. And classes too, right?
Yeah, and I think Peter. Oh, the Daily Bugle stuff is really stupid in this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not even like things. It's just like one. It's literally like one thing. It's
well,
something
they,
that could have been cut.
She takes pictures and to make it so that we can link Spider-Man and Peter together to other people. We have to make him a photographer, and we have to
find a way to make some sort of interaction with him doing
and,
that.
So. And make a way for Harry to know that, right. like, Peter is in contact with Spider-Man. Which, you know, would have been fine if they had, like, set that up in the first movie at the end, like, hey, I'm going to start, like, taking pictures and start looking for a job.
Yeah, again, it's very confusing. It's like, crap, we have to get somewhere. How do we get there? What's the path of least resistance? We'll just mention it. Like, he emails Jameson, and Jameson emails him right back. Like,
yeah, he's like, just like, shut up, kid.
Yeah.
Which is all kind of a shame that's how that's all handled, especially since, like, if I liked anything about the Raimi movies, it was the portrayal of Jameson in those movies, like, and the fact that he is non-existent here is kind of a shame.
Right, yeah. So, I'm kind of glad that he's not in this, because it just would have been, like, forced.
It would have added an extra 10 minutes to a movie that already is 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Right, but at the same time, I'm also glad that they didn't. But it's they went like half in, half out, when they should have like either gone for one.
Yeah, I feel like, I think part of it is they probably don't want to recast J.K. Simmons yet.
He said he'd do it again.
Yeah, I think, because he does it for Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, what's he doing? I mean, he's not even doing anything right now.
He does those
State Farm commercials.
No, he does. Yeah, well, I mean, he stopped that.
No, I thought he had, like, a... Isn't he, like, on a Raw TV show, or did that end?
No, that's a lie. No, he's on some NBC show. But, I mean, other than that, though, he has, like, nothing to do.
Other than the animated show, his commercials, and his TV show, he's got nothing going on right now.
Right.
But, yeah.
He's, he's quite busy.
Yeah.
He's, has 1, 2, 3, 4 movies coming out this year.
Seriously?
And, 2 movies next year.
Oh, really?
And he also does voice for... I did not know he was Tenzai.
Oh, Tenzin? Yeah, you didn't know that?
Tenzin. No. And he does that. He does Ultimate Spider-Man. He has a TV show on TBS.
He does?
I think that was... Men at Work.
Oh, wait, what?
I think that was just canceled, though.
Yeah, that was canceled. But, okay, so apparently he does more than we thought.
He was on Generator Rex.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Yeah, he gets around. He gets around. He's a busy cat.
Please don't say he gets around.
He gets around. I think the other thing is, Tony, he would have been really out of place in this film.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's enough stuff in here that's kind of tonally out of place.
Yeah, like, and I was thinking to add another one.
Like, you know, the Phillips.
I don't think you need to add another one. But, yeah, so I guess at this point we might as well talk about the climax of this film.
Yeah, so Gwen dies.
Okay, we're just going to get there, huh?
I think we've said it a couple times.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, so basically Peter and Electro do, like, their little fight in the hydroelectric generator place. Then Gwen comes in, smashes Electro with a car. Then they overload him, and he's dead, maybe?
Hold on. Let's back up. Let's explain why Gwen's here, because Gwen had to be here. Because she knew how to reactivate the system.
Right, she couldn't have told him, like, at any point before he left.
To put a big switch.
Yeah, also, before we get to that point, Peter's kind of a dick, because he left all that webbing up for some dude to clean it. And he also probably looks like a creeper. He just sweep off some random girl on the street.
Yeah. Well, she didn't scream, though, so...
Is that really your defense? She didn't scream?
I mean, like, who knows? Maybe, like, hey, he knows her. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's still kind of... Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So,
really think about comic book heroes, they're all a little creepy.
Fair enough. Oh, my God, it's the Rooster Teeth guys on at midnight. Sorry.
I mean, we didn't mention this, but he does stalk her in this film.
Yeah, he does kind of stalk, and like, I get why he does it, but it's a little too much. I mean, okay, it's very too much. Like, making sure that she goes to, like, her coffee shop or wherever it is, and then like following her to the England building. Peter's kind of got it bad. Emphasis on bad.
Yeah, and it's implied that he follows her a lot more than we see in the actual film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really weird.
I think what made it creepier is when he says like "you are my path." It's just like, oh no, that's not really creepy. That's not like creepy. That's like the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he wanted to go to England with her, but did not think about like running it by his aunt first, or even like mentioning this to May at all.
I mean that's not.
I feel like that is probably a typical teenager.
Yeah, that's like, I'm going to make this gut move right now. Like, and I'll deal with the consequences when they actually arrive.
Can you imagine, though, he's like halfway to England. It's just like, hey, Aunt May, so I'm going to be gone for ever.
Yeah, I assume that he would have said something beforehand. Like, I assume it's one of those, I think both of them didn't think it through. Because she would have missed her flight and all this other stuff. But yes, it was. It's a teenage decision. I want to be with you forever, so I'm just gonna do forever and
never.
Forever. Oh,
the rest of my life.
Speaking of the climax, what was the point of the chains?
Oh, that was so stupid.
That was so dumb. Like, I would have been fine if they just like left Macy in there, but the planes, they added no tension at all.
No, it didn't. Honestly speaking, I wanted them to crash.
Yeah, me too.
Fantastic.
I was kind of hoping to be like crash. I was kind of crossing to be like crash, 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 crash.
They add these two giant planes barreling towards each other into the film, and if there was any sort of emotional attachment to anybody in that scene, it would have worked.
Yeah,
like
I don't know anybody in that. I don't know anybody on that plane.
Like if Gwen had maybe gotten on the plane, or
that would have been more important,
or like
more significant,
right? Or you know, Aunt May was coming back from somewhere. Like we don't know anybody on the plane,
right?
And
everyone on that plane could be a dick.
Right, well, even if they're not, like, it has nothing to do with Spider-Man.
It has nothing to do with the battle.
It has nothing to do with Peter, has nothing to do with Spider-Man. It just happens to be a consequence of the fact that Electro has drained all the power. And like we don't really need to understand that the stakes are high.
Right.
Like,
the stakes were high when there was, like, pandemonium in the streets and there was no power.
Right. There's a dude running around and he has all the electricity jacked up into him. Like,
right. Like, that's,
I think the stakes are high.
Yeah. It's not like they can just, like, it's not like he can just, like, leave the city and, like, the power will come back on, like, 10 minutes.
Right.
That scene was so dumb.
Yeah, it was so, and you had, not only did you have the two planes, you also had the air mission control people, and I'm like, I don't care about any of these people.
Who are you people?
Crisis averted, they celebrated, I'm like, was I supposed to, like, I honestly thought they did that because the planes were going to crash,
and then you
give Peter more guilt or something like that. No, as far as I know, it's not even like near a Spider-Man, it's not even like,
right.
Oh,
no, it's just like several hundred feet up in the air. I don't know.
It was really dumb.
I thought that there was going to be some sort of like significance to it at the end or something, but no, it's just thrown in, and it takes like, it goes on for about like 3 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, however long it goes on, it should have been cut.
Yeah, again, a lot of stuff in this film could have been cut. I think that's the big one, because it adds nothing to the climax. It's just a way to cut up the action, which didn't need to be cut up, because the action itself was pretty...
Yeah. Oh, dude, like... The Times Square battle and like the last battle, those are both like really great action scenes.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention this earlier with Electro. I like the fact that they only have two battles here, and Spider-Man finds a way to beat him both times, because like, it's, you know, I enjoy it sometimes, but it does kind of get hokey in comic book movies when you meet the bad guy, nothing happens. You meet the bad guy again, nothing happens. You meet him a third time, and this is when the movie has to end.
Right.
And this one, it's like, yeah, Peter defeats him the first time.
It's a Spider-Man 1 syndrome.
Yeah, Peter defeats him the first time. He gets freezed by Harry for his selfish means. Peter defeats him a second time using a creative means. And that's it. It's not a long, drawn-out battle. It's not like a multi-park where the villain decides that they want to retreat or something. And he does get beat squarely both times.
Yeah. Also, on the subject of Electro, I like his visual design, and I like the music that they have for him. That, like, mixture of, like, it's like electric guitar and horns, and that sort of, like, voice, which is to symbolize, like, how unhinged he is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially like how they digitize his voice. I think that helps make him more threatening.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My favorite shot of that is when they're in Ravencroft. Yeah, Ravencroft. And Harry like tases him, and then like he just like slowly comes back together after shocking all those guards. Like, that's a great visual.
And then after he's defeated and Gwen plays her Darren role, switching that switch at the last second.
Mm-hmm.
Green Goblin just shows up
out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
it was. I mean, it was like a slow, but well, it's like he's gone for like 10 minutes of the film. after that like evolution scene, if you want to call it that.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that was his intention. It was for actually like a weakened Spider-Man and for him to come and steal his blood.
Right. Something about that scene, like that whole like mutation scene, that I felt like I was having a seizure. Those lights were a bit too much.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But you didn't think so?
I did.
I was also sitting like fairly like close to the screen.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That might do it.
Yeah, I've even heard some people like might have had seizures while watching that scene.
So he shows up, he sees Gwen, he grabs her. I think somebody pointed this out, and maybe it was the old architect. Why is there a clock tower next to the electric grid?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place as any for one, right?
Yeah, if you want to tell the time while you're siphoning all the city's power.
It's a really tall clock tower,
yeah,
too.
That's how you do it. Yeah, it's ridiculously high. I don't think I've ever seen
the Empire State Building of clock towers.
Right. I know it's New York, but still, it's like pretty freaking high.
That's not New York. New York does not decide to build a power grid and then have a giant clock tower next to it for no reason.
It's someone's New York.
It's Sony's Marvel New York.
Yeah.
But he drops Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, actually, he drops her. Peter catches her the first time. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they continue to fight, which was a pretty decent fight.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought he killed him.
Yeah, me too. It looked like a video game, but a good video game. Like it was very fast and like frenetic, but it wasn't like you were able to tell like what was going on.
Yeah, and then so he dropped, and then they have a fight, and
knocks Harry out, and then the web snaps.
And my God, that was so terrible. I felt so bad.
Like emotionally terrible, or just like terribly done?
No, because you could hear when she hits the floor and she.
Oh, dude, that was the worst part, that they showed like her head like snapping and hitting the ground.
Yeah, because usually like in the comics, like he catches her too late and the pull of it. Here it's like he catches her too late, but she also hits the ground.
Yeah, it's like Jesus Christ.
It was a brutal
scene to watch.
I liked it.
You're an awful person.
No, like I just thought, like, even though I knew it was coming, and even though there's no emotional reason for why it should work in this film, because that they don't allow it to grow at all, like that storyline. But when she hits, it's like it kind of hits you, like. Mm-hmm. Shit, they did kill her. Yeah. Like, I knew they were going to kill her, but they did kill her.
Right. I don't know why, but I was also kind of hoping that, like, he would pull something last minute. Not, like, snap her neck, but, like, he would be able to save her. And then it happens, just like, oh, my God, he did it.
Yeah. And they do it in the most brutal fashion. It's not like, mm-hmm. oh man, she's gonna, like, she, like, she's dead before, like, he, you know, he's trying to get her to open her eyes.
He's definitely trying to get to her.
Yeah, and then the blood starts dripping out of her nose.
Mm-hmm. I think what also sells it is the music. It's like soft little twinkles where it's like kind of fakes you out into thinking that he might catch her just in time.
And I think that, I mean, it's kind of what makes the movie for me is that scene, but it works even better for, like, people that don't know anything about Gwen Stacy and Peter Parker. Like, I was there in the theater, and there were obviously people behind me that just don't, they weren't expecting this. Their only experience with Spider-Man is through the movies. And, like, these girls are sobbing uncontrollably.
Like, I heard a few people gasp. They're just like, oh my god.
Right. Like, it was like, it shows that it's still, even though they don't deserve it at all, it still pulls out what it gets you.
Yeah.
I just still don't get, like, why she had to die.
Well, I mean, it's because that's where the character has to go.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, like, why couldn't they just, like, send her to England, and that way that would have made, I don't know, it just, like, feels kind of dumb that she has to die in every single continuity.
Well, I mean, she didn't die in Spectacular.
Well, okay, that also, like, died before it could kill her.
She didn't die in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3.
Well, she wasn't there in Spider-Man 3.
She was.
No, she wasn't.
I don't believe she dies in Ultimate. Well, she dies and she's resurrected as Carnage in Ultimate Spider-Man. Well,
yeah, so she dies.
What do you mean she wasn't there in Spider-Man 3? Gwen Stacy's in Spider-Man 3.
No, she's not, Chris. Shut your face.
She's there.
Chris, I'm going to break your jaw. No, she wasn't.
I mean, it's not a good Gwen Stacy.
She wasn't in Spider-Man 3.
She even gets a dance number.
Right.
She's totally
wasted in that movie.
You two are obviously wrong. This didn't happen.
We'll go with that.
there's a lot to ignore in Spider-Man 3. I don't think you necessarily need to ignore Gwen Stacy.
You mean that blonde woman who showed up and did absolutely nothing for the film?
You could have called her anybody, but we were calling Gwen Stacy because that's what the credits say.
that woman.
Bryce Dallas Howard, Gwen Stacy.
And we kind of already touched on the ending, and I think we mentioned this with The Amazing Spider-Man 1. They really, really, really do kind of hint at the fact that Aunt May knows.
Oh, yeah. She totally knows by the end of this one. I think she even knows in the laundry scene. She's just, like, teasing about it.
Yeah, but then she acts so dumb in other scenes, like I don't know about it. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Well, I think she was, like, ignorant towards the, the Oscorp stuff. But for the most part, she knows that Peter's Spider-Man.
We said that with the last film, too, and then they came back, and it seems like they're hinting that she doesn't know in this film.
Okay,
And then at the end, it seems like she knows. So it's like this film wants her to know, but not know.
They're weird about it like that.
Yeah, I feel like, again, it's something they should have saved for the sequel, because it does seem like, one, I think at that point the movie was just running along as it was, but it seems like it's an idea that should probably be better served elsewhere. Yeah, I don't know. And then we mentioned that Rhino scene and already.
Yeah. So realistically, that kid would have totally gotten, like, gunned down, right?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of expecting that kid to die.
I was expecting Rhino to open fire on him and Spider-Man to come in at the last second.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Rhino not to, just to taunt the kid and do nothing.
Right. It was like, not to sound awful, but, like, I was totally banking on that kid to get shot at.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess to end it, because this movie doesn't know when to end, we have the most random post-credit sequence ever.
X-Men.
Yes, and then it's marked in another film that's not related to this at all.
Right. It's like, the weird thing is, like, I'm cool with it, like, being in the film if it has to be, but I don't get, but, like, they transitioned it so badly.
But it's just like, all right, we're gonna kind of show off the fact that we're doing a Sinister Six movie, and then we're gonna stop, and we're gonna cut, and we're gonna show. right. scene from a movie that is being produced by Fox. Right.
Well, it's like the weird thing is, I don't know about you guys, but I thought that like when they did that little static, it was gonna show like Electro like kind of like reemerging out of something, like there'd be a hand or something. But I wasn't expecting like the freaking X Cerebro.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you guys thinking that?
It was really out of, like, I thought, you know, like, superhero movies did a post-credit sequence, so I expected it would be more, because they kind of hinted, kind of going into this movie not knowing to end, and we kind of skipped over this. There's another scene in the end, when the random dude goes to Harry's jail cell, and he's like, we got it, and we have, like, our candidates or whatever. Mm-hmm. That should have been the post-credit sequence for this film.
Yeah, that should have, and which is weird, and it's weird that it's in the film, because, well, I mean, it's not weird. But it's weird, like, what they cut out of it, because in one of the commercials for it, they show, like, he's walking through the hall, so it's, like, the vulture wings, the octopus arms, and then there's, like, this giant black, like, goop thing just, like, floating in midair, and I thought that they were going to show that in the film, but apparently not, so it makes no sense why it's in the commercials.
Meh.
Well, there's that, the whole, you know, surveillance scene that's not in the film either, so...
Well, true.
Yes, but we were lucky enough that they kept the chimney joke in.
Yeah.
That's still a funny joke.
Oh, Justin.
Of
course you did. You're probably... But yeah, I think this doesn't make sense sums up my feelings on this movie as a whole. Again, I think it's carried a lot by the strong performances. I actually enjoy most people in this film. I already sung the praise of Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone with the first one. I think I enjoyed Harry in this a lot more than James Franco's version.
Yeah, he has a lot more to do, and he's better, like, physically he's better cast.
I don't know about... Well, I guess...
Well, As far as what they're going for...
Yeah.
I still think Willem Dafoe's the best Goblin.
Oh, yeah, totally. He has stuff. Well, maybe they should have, like, had Willem Dafoe just, like, with no makeup, like, how he normally is. They should have just put him in the bed instead of Chris Cooper.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, and maybe his nails are actually that long.
Like, we're just going to haphazardly tie all the Spider-Man movies together, and these are just alternate realities.
He's like, avenge me, my son. My last one kind of screwed that up.
What if they do that with Spider-Man 4? Like what they did with X-Men Days of Future Past? They get like, McGuire.
They get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield.
Right.
like once Ultimate Spider-Man was Amazing Spider-Man and it teamed up. But yeah, I guess we get into rap. So out of 7, what do you give the Amazing Spider-Man... Justin.
The story is an absolute mess. There's no doubt about it, and it's got issues. But I like the performances and the action and the music enough to, like, let about 80% of that slide. I feel like the worst thing about it is that they flat out hint toward the Sinister Six movie, like, directly towards the end with the credits. But aside from that, I think I'd give it, like, a 5.
Okay.
A Sinister Six movie that... Who the fuck is going to go see that?
I don't know.
I'm really curious about it, because... Like, if Andrew Garfield's not going to be in it, what is the purpose of it?
I think they're going to do Sinister Six before they do Spider-Man 3. I could be wrong on that.
No, that's what I've heard as well, but like, I just don't understand the...
Like, who is it for?
Right.
Well, especially, like, because only two of those villains are... Well, 2.5 of those villains are, like, pre-established.
And who wants to go to a movie specifically tied around bad dudes doing bad things?
Right. I mean, well, it's like
no hero.
I mean, it's like, who wants to go see, like, fucking Kraven the Hunter and the fucking Vulture?
Well, I will be honest. I don't mind the concept of bad dudes doing bad things. I would go see. I for one would love to see a Secret Six movie. But I think the difference there is like they're anti-heroes.
Mm-hmm. But these guys are just like straight up bad.
they're Spider-Man villains, and you don't have Spider-Man in the film. It's really weird.
Right. Like, what's the purpose of it? Right. Like,
is it just going to be like the Avengers, but with bad guys?
Like, I'm not opposed to having a movie like with anti-heroes or, morally
ambiguous characters.
Right. Like, but this is like these dudes like get together in the comics to do crimes, right. And Spider-Man comes and stops them.
They kill people,
or like they get together to kind of take down Spider-Man. Like,
right.
it's always we know
how that ends.
Yeah, it's like, but if Spider-Man's not going to be in it, like, what's the
purpose?
Point? Yeah, like,
yeah, and that's why I'm curious about this movie, because I'm really kind of, I'm like, what are you going to do with this?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But the scene, whatever you want to call it, where they're like showing off the tech, it just makes no sense. Because I mean, only two of those villains are really significant, like Green Goblin, I guess Dr. Octopus. But it's like, I don't think people care about the Rhino or the Vulture or Kraven or Mysterio or Chameleon or whoever the mask is supposed to be. It's supposed to be Kraven or not Kraven, but Mysterio or Chameleon.
I could definitely get behind like Mysterio, but not in like his own movie,
right?
Or even a movie about villains,
right? Like, who's this? Like, even when they announced them, I'm tweeting like, who is this movie for? How many people know who like the Sinister Six are?
Well, I mean, not to get into this too much, but since we are recording this on Wednesday, Sony did release their financial statement this year, and
that too,
$1.25 billion.
Dude,
so,
I think this movie had like a 72% like drop off after opening weekend.
And it was 59.
Which is average.
Yeah, it's actually higher. I think it's lower than Captain America and Thor 2. But
I guess.
Yeah, I think.
Still, dude.
I think a lot of comic book movies are just front-loaded these days because the people who really want to see them see it open weekend. So that's not a thing. I don't think it's going to do ultimately as well as the predecessor here, but it seems to be doing very well internationally.
Yeah, it's already made, about $650 million worldwide. So, like, it's going to make Sony its money back on it.
Yeah. So Sony's probably seeing Marvel and like, crap, we only have one franchise. How do we milk this?
Right. Well, I guess they're going to have to like recast Peter Parker after the third one.
I mean, it's lucky enough for them that they did get Spider-Man because it's such a vast universe. The problem is that you need Spider-Man for most of it.
It's going to stop being a vast universe pretty soon. Like I feel like with this film in particular, it feels like Sony is very close to hitting a brick wall.
It works for them because they can hit the brick wall as long as they continue to do well. And then when it does, they can just reboot it because they don't have that contract anymore that Fox has, but they have to continuously make movie. Now they have the license for as long as they want to hold it.
What I think would be best for Sony, since they're bleeding money, would be to make a new deal with Marvel, let them have Spider-Man back, but like Disney pays you like some sort of residual on like every time Spider-Man's used.
That would be the best option for them at this point.
I actually heard, and I don't know how true this is, internet here, I actually heard that in order for them to get the contract they have now with Disney, they sold all the merchandise and rights to Spider-Man, which is stupid.
Well, I mean, that's why you're seeing Spider-Man in Disney Infinity.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would have to be, like, its own product.
They should have also added a film to that, too. I feel like Marvel would like know what to do with these guys with Spider-Man better than Sony does right now.
Like, I mean, it's not a Marvel or Sony thing. It's honestly Sony just needs to get good people on it. Like the writers they have here aren't the greatest, which is why a lot of people are apprehensive about them.
The writers that they have for this are the people who wrote Transformers 2 and Star Trek Into Darkness.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, which is my point. They don't have the best resume, so maybe if they got new writers.
I mean, we can say what we want about them, but those movies make studios a ton of money. Like, these guys don't, like, they don't make not $100 million movies, so.
That's also true.
Like, until they really kind of stumble, and yes, they've been given, like, you know, franchises like Mission Impossible and Transformers and stuff that is going to, you know, it already has name recognition, but, I mean, it's hard to go, oh, they shouldn't give this, like, when studios look at them and go, hey, you know, these two make gold, like, whether it's them or not, like.
I mean, they do kind of shit like with gold at this point.
Right, and it's, I mean, it's hard to, you know, go, don't use them, like, even though you might get a better product out of it.
Right. But still, those two can't really write worth anything.
Yes, this is why we're all excited for them to direct Star Trek.
Well, it's just the one dude.
Yes, anyhow.
They've split up, like,
yeah, they broke up.
This is their,
I believe, their last.
I think this is their last. Well, no. Yeah, you're right, because they didn't write Transformers 4.
Yeah. So, Chris, what do you give it?
So, I for all the kind of negativity we've had in this podcast, like, I do think that, you know, Emma Stone and Andrew Garfield are still entertaining to watch on screen. I enjoyed Jamie Foxx's turn as Electro. Visually, it's a great looking film. I found it exciting. Like, I was able to just turn my brain off for a little bit and go, hey, that's pretty, and just enjoy it. And sometimes that's all you need with a movie, is to just be able to just sit back and enjoy it. Like, I don't need anything deep. It's still not very good, but I'm more positive on it than I am negative. I'll go 4 out of 7.
Okay, and I was going to go 4 out of 7 as well. It's pretty down the road. I mean, down the middle. Great cast, great performances. I wish they had more to work with. A more coherent or tightly scripted movie would have done wonders. I don't know if Sony's going to give up on it, but I really do hope they drop the self-taught with the parents, because it's been 2 movies and I still don't find myself invested in it as much as they keep on trying to get me to be. So, hopefully they drop that with the 3rd one, or with the Venom movie, or the Sinister Six movie, or whatever else movies they're going to trying to do.
Before we sign off, what is your current, like, lineup of, like, best to worst?
I think it would go Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then Amazing Spider-Man 3. I mean, well, Spider-Man 3, I should say.
Just, like, preemptively putting Amazing Spider-Man 3 above.
Yeah. I would go Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 1, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 1, and Spider-Man 3. Not that Spider-Man 1 is bad. I just enjoyed these two more.
Cool.
Are you not going to share yours?
Are we going, like, what my initial thoughts were, like, when I originally saw them? Or are we going past 5 weeks that we've been watching Spider-Man?
The past 5 weeks.
If we go by that, I think I go Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man.
Wait, from best to worst?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, I guess Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then Spider-Man 3.
All right. And James said, go see Neighbors. So I'm just going to assume that means Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 1, Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, and Spider-Man. No, I'm sorry. I'm assuming James's is Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 1, Amazing Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 3, and then Amazing Spider-Man 2.
His isn't Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 1, Amazing Spider-Man, and Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Nope.
I'm
totally pulling that out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure, like,
you're probably
right.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Amazing Spider-Man 2 3 times.
Yeah, that's definitely it. It's actually 5 times. He doesn't recognize that there's any other Spider-Man movies except the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
He said that the Amazing Spider-Man 2 was the greatest movie he's ever seen in his entire life.
Can't make that up. So, yes, while we're making fun of James, I do want to thank everybody for doing this month's segment. And I have no idea when we'll be back. I want to do it again. It was fun watching movies. So for James, who's not here, but we got to make fun of Chris, Justin, and myself, this has been the Amazing Spider-Cast.
And everybody know the story of David and Goliath, but this is bigger than triumph. This is for the warrior. This is for you and I. This is for euphoria. Give me a peace of mind. God is recording this. Won't you look in the sky? Tell him that you got the behavior of your neighbor, even when stability's never in your favor. Fly with the turbulence. Only last a minute. Land on your dreams and recognize you live it. Walk through the valley and peaks with bare feet. Run through the flames. There's more passion for me. A glass testimony just so the world can see. Better wounds on me. You're watching me lick them clean. I know my pride, my goals, my eyes, my lows. I know it's mind control. I know I can prosper, no imposter. Prosecute my posture. I stand up and I stand by you. What?
I am a freedom fighter, the name that history wrote. And even through disaster, I held the tiger for hope. I'm trying to find my way back. There's no day off for heroes. And even when I'm tired, go is the only word.
And the night is taking over, and the moonlight gets exposure. And the players have been chosen, and it seems like fate has spoken. When it seems your faith is broken, by the second losing focus. Ain't no way to get up, get up, get up, get up, unless you're more
focused. But they wonder
freezes my shadow. In the midst of all this darkness, I sacrifice my ego. There ain't no room for selfish. We do it for the people.
And the night is taking over, and the moonlight gets exposure. And the players have been chosen, and it seems like fate has spoken. When it seems your faith is broken, by the second losing focus. Ain't no way to get up, get up, get up, get up, unless you move forward.
Trying to get on top. Everybody from the birth down to the blocks. Gotta hold on tight and don't let go, let go. Huh. So you think you hot? Gotta grind hard, give it all you got. You can have it, you can have none. We see that a lot in the ghetto, ghetto. It's on again.